Last season for Jonah Tong. And there's his first one of the day. Catches Loma Vida looking. Strike three to get out of a jam. 21 years old right now. That fastball, Carlos Tavares down swinging. And here's the 0-2. Taken at the knees, strike three. First pro season, 84 games played, hit 288. And goes the opposite way here. And let's see if that power is enough. It is enough to get out. So Boston Barrow, we talk about adding the weight to get some more power. Works out in the spring breakout game. It's 1-0. And that one is driven deep to center field. You can kiss it goodbye. Ryan Clifford, a bomb to straightaway center, and the Mets have a 5-0 lead.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Monday, March the 17th, 2025. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, Talking Mets, no G. And don't forget the newsletter. Would love to see you subscribe. Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Happy St. Paddy's Day to everybody who celebrates out there in the audience. Early here Monday morning, coming to you as we have hit what I talked about for a while, but about a week ago, really those dog days of spring training. And you know why you know it's there? I said it last week, daylight savings time hits. That's when you know that, hey, baseball's here. You know, it's getting lighter later. You could smell those night games. You could smell those, you know, days where, you know, the sun is setting and it's, you know, it's the sixth or seventh inning because you're up, the sun's out till about 9 p.m. And, you know, when that first change of the clock occurs, that's when you know the regular season, I think, is just about here. And there's really not much else left to talk about with spring training. This is going to be one of the harder shows. I mean, as I was sitting around thinking about it, you have some positional battles due to injuries that are, you know, still out there. We'll recap those real quick. You have the spring breakout game, which, you know, I don't sit and assess prospects. You know, we have guys like our buddy Ernie Dove that does that. We try to do a little bit of that here, but you know, it's so hard. We're not scouts. So hard to assess prospects until you see them compete at the highest level. But I think the spring breakout game is a really interesting concept. It's a great way in an environment where you're trying to market the game, keep fans engaged, not only with the team now, but in some cases for fans of teams that aren't going anywhere, really give them hope for the future. So I think it's a great thing. It was on SNY last night. But, you know, the real thing that came to mind, and this really, this short, I call it a bridge show, because the next step for us is opening day, which is less than 2 weeks away, and previewing the season, and we'll get to that. But this bridge show is we have that last full week of spring training where you're really just working out the kinks. The Mets do have some significant roster spots at the side, rotation, bullpen. It looks like when it comes to the final spots of the roster, injuries, especially with the oblique to McNeil, solve the Beatty Acuna situation, which maybe because nothing else than situation, some luck there, maybe not for McNeil. McNeil's not out long. It looks like that'll be a short-term thing if you listen to him. It gives the Mets a chance to have some extended look at those two kids in big league action. So I fully expect that to be where it goes. But I think looking at the spring breakout game, and that's going to be a theme today as we do this short State of the Union, so to speak. The biggest, other than the on-the-field leveraging what happened last year, Soto's first year, building on the momentum of the NLCS. You all know that. The Mets want to be consistent contenders, and you can't take a big step back and not be in it this year or have a horrible year. It would be disastrous for the organization. But I think the right there, maybe 1A, and you saw a little bit of it last night at the spring breakout game on SNY, is the development that the organization has on pitching and specifically positional players, because the Mets are going to need them. You've already seen how, and let's face it, it may not be Stearns because Beatty was here before and Acuña was acquired before Stearns. Two members of the Mets' top 10 prospect group and guys who have been in the top 100 in the league are going to play a somewhat significant part, at least for a few weeks early in the season. And that's important, and we'll get into that. So let's just start here with the roster, because that's really where we're at. And, you know, I know that you saw typical Tylor Megill yesterday. You know, he didn't, and it is spring training. Let's be fair to Megill. But, you know, you look at the advanced metrics, the pitch FX, the things like that, and, you know, every one of his pitches always seems to fare well when it comes to movement, velocity. But when you look and you really do an assessment of Megill, he always seems to be a guy that struggles to get through five innings, you know, maybe gives up three or four runs. He's not having a bad spring. You know, he's got a whip of a little over one. He's striking out. Actually, his walks are down, and he's striking out more than one batter per nine innings. I expect Megill to make the roster. At this point, I really think the options are important for Megill. And when Manaea comes back, and I don't know if Blackburn is a real bullpen option. I know that's been floated about right now. And that'll be interesting to see. Can he get up and down? Is he just a long guy that could eat innings? Maybe do what Adrian Hauser did last year. I know Hauser had a lousy year, but he actually pitched fairly well out of the bullpen before they got rid of him late in the season. And they revamped their bullpen. But I think the real key here is, you know, what do you do with Megill when Manaea comes back? Are you going to go to a six-man rotation? Right now, Holmes is your quote-unquote ace. Senga, they're kind of easing into the season. He hasn't looked great this spring. Peterson, you know, can he, you know, continue to build upon what he saw last year? Quietly be that 3-4 starter. Can he be more than what he was profiled and what he's been with some flashes, with that exception in his pro career, which is really a fifth starter? And then you have Griffin Canning, who has impressed this spring. And how does that secondary stuff play multiple times through the order? Because you have to disguise the fastball. That's what gets him in trouble. And then obviously you have Megill and what have you. So your rotation is pretty much set, unless there's some kind of wrinkle or some kind of deal in the works. I don't see an Alcantara in the works right now, a Dylan Cease. I think the way this works is the Mets are going to go into the season, see what they have. You have, like I always call it, the getting to know you phase. What is the staff going to be able to produce? And talk about an ace or who's going to be available and what kind of prospect capital the Mets could give up, which would be very expensive now because you're going to have to wow somebody. I mean, everybody feels to a certain degree they're in it right now in spring training, and especially as you enter the last week of spring training. Nobody's going to go, even Miami, and say, okay, here's my ace for a discount. You're going to have to, you know, see through this, and that's part of the theme here today, which is the farm system and how can the Mets kind of, you know, build on that, because it needs to become a bigger tool on many facets of the organization. So it looks like the kids are going to help the Mets early on, Peterson and Acuña. It looks like even though Megill didn't get deep into the game yesterday, maybe struggled a little bit, his numbers are pretty good and his metrics are pretty good. I think I'm actually excited to see what Megill could produce. Okay, Megill, he's always going to, I think, going to be consistent. I think he's going to have those clunkers, on, especially on the road. I think there's going to be days where he can't get out of the third or fourth inning. But with what you see, with the metrics you see on the pitch FX, if he continues that route and stays healthy, and that's a big if because he does seem to have mechanics that drag. He's already had shoulder issues. You know, I don't think he's ever going to be a top of the rotation guy. I think he's going to be a guy that may, you know, always leave you wanting. But I think he's a useful piece. And I used to use this analogy with Steven Matz all the time. And I thought and to this day, I think Steven Matz could have always been better. For whatever reason, injuries, you know, other aspects of being, you know, a best version of yourself. I thought Mats could have been a number two or number three. And he always had those stretches, more so early in his career, where he pitched like that. And towards the end of his Mets career, he was more of a four or five, but he was one of those rare fours or fives that could go out and he could look like a top of the rotation pitcher at any time. I think McGill's going to be one of those guys, just like Mats. So I think the Mets can navigate early. They certainly need Manaea. Montas is another situation altogether. I'm not sure what to think about him. I think his season is lost, but they certainly could use Manaea. The good news is Manaea's, seems to be on the way back. The most interesting part of the spring has been the bullpen because you seem to have a bit of a logjam, some interesting non-roster invitees, some arms in the organization that have options that I think, and I've said from day one, are really going to be the reason why they don't make the club. But right now you have Diaz. Let's assume Minter makes it up north. We'll see about that if he needs more time. Again, he seems to be pitching, and a guy like that, a veteran like that, doesn't need much in spring training to get ready. You have Jose Buto. You have Reed Garrett, who's my prediction for a breakout pitcher this year out of the bullpen. I think he's working on staying away from the fastball, maybe working a cutter in there a little bit more. He has that elite, slider. We all know about that splitter, whatever you want to call it. Ryan Stanek is in the bullpen. And you got Kranick, who I think has pushed his way into the conversation. He's looked really, really good with elite stuff. We don't know what they're going to do about Blackburn in terms of whether they're going to send McGill down, take another pitcher, put Blackburn in the rotation, or, bring Blackburn. You've heard some stories about Blackburn coming out of the pen. I don't know. Maybe Blackburn just needs to start on the injured list and maybe do some work in extended spring. The Mets are playing that close to the vest. I think that's an option, too, as you come back down. And then there's Danny Young, and I know that Anthony Ghost, the former outfielder, has had a couple of moments here, but I think the fact that Danny Young, has that elite stuff, does not have options. I can't see them sneaking him through waivers unless you strategically keep him to literally the last day when other teams' rosters are set. You're not going to be able to shuttle him because of the fact he doesn't have options. So at some point, I think you got to figure out what you have there. Why not just figure out at the beginning of the year? I think Danny Young's always going to be inconsistent. The key is you have Minter as your lefty because of the three batter rule, and because I think teams are starting to develop players that really need to go both ways, going back to the old school way of pitching that you saw before specialization over the last 30 or 35 years. I don't know if a second lefty is as important as it used to be. It's nice to have, especially in the division with Schwarber and Harper, Olsen. I could go on and on here. The thing is this, even if it's early in the ball game, like the sixth inning, do you trust Danny Young against Matt Olsen? Do you trust him against Schwarber or Harper? Maybe. He has to show you more. He's a guy that's liable to throw the ball to the backstop. So Danny Young will be interesting. I just think, before you decide that he doesn't have value, because I think the lack of options eventually will lead to him being lost. He's got enough talent. His metrics are good enough where somebody's going to bring him in and say, hey, we'll work with him and what have you. So away you go. And what's interesting is that you're going to have about three, and this is where how far the Mets have come, especially in just a short span of time, where the Mets are walking around here in July, a mess, the bullpen. You're holding your breath the final 6 to 9 outs of the ball game. And they got to go out and get Maton. They go out and get Stanek. Diekman is a guy that they thought that we're going to get more about. He was a disaster. And you're relying, on Buto, really, to play this Seth Lugo role where when you bring him in, you need to use him, you need to maximize the use, and you're not going to have him for a couple of days. So it was not a good situation. And Diaz, Diaz is up and down. But taking Diaz and putting him, and I know everybody's concerned about him because of his velocity. I'm not. Let's see when the bell rings and the adrenaline is there. The Mets have three guys, and I'm not even counting, scrap heap guys like Herget, and Austin Warren, but Nunez, Brazenban, and Zuber, who I think would be in a lot of teams' bullpens, and not only a lot of teams' bullpens, playing significant parts of the bullpen. Now, Daniel Nunez will be on this roster. He's going to push his way in. Now, whether that means that a guy like Kranick comes north and doesn't perform like he did in spring, gets shuttled out when Nunez is ready, he's going to be part of this bullpen. I mean, mark my words. At whose expense? Is it Danny Young and they only go one lefty? Is it Blackburn that just doesn't work out of the bullpen or is not ready health-wise? That'll be a little interesting. Reed Garrett has options, believe it or not. So if he doesn't perform, he possibly could go down. But everybody else is locked in there. The only two spots with options in this bullpen is Reed Garrett and Kranick. And then there's Danny Young, who's the more, if you want to risk losing somebody. So this is going to get crowded quick. It's a good problem to have. Nunez is a guy with great stuff. He was the guy that really was starting to emerge right before he got hurt in August. And really, I think, was a big loss. I think he would have made a big, big impact in the postseason if he could have been around and maybe made things a little bit easier against the Dodgers. I'm not saying he would have been the key to beating the Dodgers, but it made things a little bit easier because of the struggles that Maton and the limitations that I think Stanek has with his style of pitching against some rosters. So, Brazenban, another guy they acquired at the deadline, Zuber at the deadline. Zuber, great metrics on his stuff. All of this is exciting. You just don't have enough spots. Now, you know that somebody's going to need to go on the IL. You know that there's going to be some of that. And, it's an actual interesting thing. For the first time, the Mets have too many spots here. Too many relievers, not enough spots. I mean, when's the last time we spoke about that? So the roster is set. There's things that are still to be determined. I definitely think the injuries to McNeil and Alvarez and Manaea put a little bit of a damper on the early part of the season. I think Manaea is critically important in that rotation. I think he enhances it. And getting him back first out of those three is important. I think for Alvarez's development, the hand injury could not have come at a worse time. I think I tweeted about this, but I spoke to someone around the game who has some familiarity with these type of injuries. And he says, look, it's not the end of the world. It's not going to end his career. But the rehab, getting back on the field is one part of the rehab. The other part of the rehab is strengthening the hand and getting a lot of that whip back, especially the kind of strength you need to be a power hitter. And that could take some time. So you might see, a different version, a less power version of Alvarez early on when he gets back. And while he's doing that, while he's trying to, work on his new swing and develop as young players do, it will make for an interesting season. And then, McNeil, look, I don't know what the deal is with these obliques around the spring. Maybe it's this more powerful swing, maybe just overdoing it. The Mets need McNeil in that lineup. I know people poo-poo this. I am interested to see how Beatty plays at second. Acuna again, maybe he gets some time, the little platoon, maybe he gets the tough lefty. I certainly think late Acuna is going to play a similar role defensively that Jose Iglesias played. I think really what's interesting defensively is that I don't think Mark Vientos is going to come out defensively late. I mean, now that you don't have Iglesias around, you're going to have to worry more about second base with Beatty potentially being the second baseman in the interim right now. And I think Vientos has come a long way where Vientos is going to be the third baseman, both sides of the ball now. I mean, it's quite amazing 12 months later where Vientos has come. But right now, when McNeil comes back, and depending how Vientos performs at third, I mean, he's not going to be your gold glover there, but he's been more than passable. We'll see how that continues. But look, this is a chance for Beatty and Acuna to really make things interesting. I mean, they perform well when the bell rings, even if it's for only for a couple of weeks, and then McNeil's ready to come back mid to late April, and both are playing well. You're going to have to send one down. That's going to be very, very interesting. I mean, this is the last year of both having options. You got to start to see what you have. And look, that's really the big theme and the big takeaway from the spring breakout game. It is so important for the Mets to continue to have options. And not every option is going to be a star. Look, you might be excited about Carson Benj or Jet Williams or even Ryan Clifford. I mean, I know everyone loves the prodigious home runs of a Ryan Clifford. And I love when people say, oh, he's Pete Alonso's replacement. You got a long way to go from hitting a home run in a spring breakout game, popping some home runs in Brooklyn, starting the season at Double-A Binghamton to what Pete Alonso has accomplished, will accomplish, and who he is. It's nice, easy comparison, but it's nice that we're having that conversation because you start to look at the Mets. They need, and this, it was interesting, and I always say this, farm systems and their rankings are marketing things from MLB. And whoever puts these together, whether it be Baseball Prospectus, MLB, whatever the site you go to, Pipeline, all this stuff, and I'm not accusing anybody of malfeasance here, but remember, there's personal biases, there's access and information that comes with putting these lists together, and just like any other reporter, when you get a pipeline to somebody, no pun intended there, when you get a pipeline to somebody, the last thing you want to do is hurt that source by being less than, you know, glowing about maybe some of the prospects they have on their end. Because it's going to come from an executive in an organization. You know, maybe an agent. I don't know. I mean, probably more in this, the scouting community is probably a bigger driver of this. And everybody has their biases. The Yankees always seem to be, everybody assumes because you're a Yankees prospect, you're good. And if you look at the top 100, I don't think I see any Yankees prospects on the top 100. But the Mets have meandered around this 11, 13, you know, mid, a little bit in the top half, but not quite the elite when it comes to prospects. And that's okay, but I think part of that might be outside of Sproat, maybe Bench, Jet Williams. I don't know if anybody in the organization knows that. Is there upper level elite talent on the positional and the pitching side? Now, I think the pitching is exciting. I mean, you saw Jonah Tong yesterday. Sproat impressed during spring training. Those guys are there. I mean, out of the top 10, Nolan McClain. I mean, again, a lot of excitement on that whatever sweeper slider. I don't know what they're going to call anything here. There's still a ton of positional prospects in this top 10. And I think between what I just talked about on their bullpen side, and I know there's other arms that the Mets are trying to develop there in the minor leagues, about time, developing bullpen arms. I think the pitching side is a little bit ahead of the offensive side because when you look at last year, you know, Clifford had an okay year. Jet Williams had a wash of a year. It was just drafted. Drew Gilbert has kind of completely fallen out of favor here, acquired in the Verlander trade. He's number 11 here, seems to always be hurt. I don't really consider Ronnie Mauricio a prospect. I mean, I think that's the interesting thing. Mauricio's a guy that we're going to forget about because he's been away so long, and he's going to have to push his way into the mix, and he probably will. And it'll be for another interesting conversation. But the fact of the matter is, even though the Mets haven't done a great job post McNeil and Pete of bringing in maybe impact positional guys, for the first time, I think they're starting to sprinkle guys who could contribute. And that's part of having a good farm system. You know, everybody thinks that it's the stars, and there's no doubt about it. You want the next Juan Soto. You want the next Pete Alonso. Everybody that's a star on the Mets roster, Lindor, they were top prospects at one point with an organization. But really, what you see that makes the Dodgers so dangerous is even when they have injuries, and they had tons of injuries to their pitchers, they're either finding a reliever that comes in, either a scrap heap guy, or they sign a free agent, and all of a sudden they're the best version of themselves. They have these names that come up through their system, and even if they only contribute for a short period of time, they're contributing. And the downside from the elite or very good talent they're replacing is a downside, but it's not tremendously, it's not like it hits the floor. Now, the Mets are better, but the fact of the matter is, here you have Alvarez hurt, and the catching situation is a perfect example of this. You had to go out a year ago, and look, Torrens has done a good job, and maybe Torrens gets this opportunity and shows he's more than just a twice-a-week backup with a strong arm. Maybe he shows he can hit, you know, hit for power, maybe hit a little more consistently, and he gives a real push where the Mets say, even when Alvarez comes back, this guy should play a little bit more. But now that Alvarez is hurt, you have Torrens, you've gone on the scrap heap with Jackson Rietz and Chris Williams, you have Hayden Senger, who's kind of looks like a organizational 4A guy with good catch and throw skills, but you really don't have anybody that could sub in and excite you at this point. And I think that's a problem. And you start to look at the outfield, and this is where it could get a little bit dicey. You know, you have, obviously, Nimmo with some knee issues coming off the plantar fasciitis. He might need to DH a little bit. Jesse Winker could come in. Obviously, Marte, Tyrone Taylor's on the roster. But if you start to have a rash of injuries, I don't know if Mauricio's really an outfielder. That's a conversation. Maybe he could come in because he could play infield and McNeil comes back. He's got that versatility. But you start to go up and down here, and you start to look at where the Mets are, and depth-wise, you're starting very quickly to rely on a Joey Meneses. You're relying on Jose Azokar, who they picked off of waivers. Alexander Canario, this bat that we were intrigued of that was designated by the Cubs. He had no more options. The Mets go and pick him up. You start to get into that. You start to get the Rafael Ortegas of the world. I mean, these are true scrap heap guys. And then you say to yourself, if the injuries start to really pile up where, Pete gets bonked on the hand and needs a week, 10 days, 15 days, you got a lineup where Meneses now is at first base, where Azokar might be in the outfield. You could fall down. And sometimes thunderbolts strike, injuries strike. Look, you guys remember this happened a couple of times, 2019, early in the year, when they brought up, they got some little bit of lightning from Carlos Gomez off the scrap heap. 2021, you had to replace the Mets, where you got Juishi Fargas. I can't remember how to even pronounce his name. You had a couple of times where the Mets really had to dig deep into the system, and the Mets weren't ready for that back then. They're a little bit better prepared for that. So as you watch the spring breakout game and you see Carson Benj, you see Boston Barrow, you see, Clifford, and I don't know, maybe Benj. Benj is the guy, and we wrote about this over at Beyond the Mic. Benj is a guy that, because he's older, he was in college, he has that Conforto feel where maybe he moves through the organization quick. And who knows? And I'm throwing a wild scenario. Marte's showing that he's shot and he can't perform. And as much as you love series glove, you're just tired of his act already. Tyrone Taylor is your typical backup. And you start to look around and Winker's more of a DH. And you say, hey, let's give this Benj a shot. Let's see what he's got. He's hitting 310 down in AA, or maybe he gets a promotion to AAA. I'm just throwing a scenario. That's what the Mets need. And then the guy comes up like Conforto did in 2015, and he's impactful. And not everybody's going to turn out to be Albert Pujols and be a Hall of Famer. We know that. But this is a key part. Like, if the Mets' top prospects continue to get injured or show fits and starts to their development, and, you have some other guys, you have Jesus Baez, who's 20 years old, which we've had Ernie Dove on the show, and he's very big on, shortstop, third base type. You have Ilian Pena, international signing. I mean, he's 17 years old. He's far, far away. Jeremy Rodriguez, 18 years old. That's who they acquired, I believe, in the Tommy Pham deal or the Marcana deal, one of those deals. You're starting to go down where a lot of these other kids, they're nowhere near ready. You can't expect more from out of them. So this is a big year for a Jet Williams, 21 years old, a Carson Benj, 22, Ryan Clifford, 21. Obviously, Beatty and Acuna, we've talked about that. And then maybe Jesus Baez pushes himself in. You need that. Drew Gilbert, again, 24 years old. Drew Gilbert is a guy that, should be having a conversation for a backup spot on this team at the very least. And, he hasn't really been, since he's a Met because of injuries, been able to show his wares. And that's where I think the Mets have to start to go, especially at the lower levels. What kind of catching can they start to develop? Can they start to develop positional players? And some of it is elite talent, but some of it is, can you get guys that are good organizational guys that can be backup outfielders, can be guys that could contribute? Maybe that's a Luke Ritter. I don't know. Maybe Luke Ritter is part of it. Not everybody has to be on the top 10, 15, 20 list. Because remember, sometimes these lists are about, upside, not about, you know, filling in a spot for 2 weeks or for a month or backup outfielders or backup catchers and things like that. So it'll be interesting. So you watch the spring breakout game, it'll be interesting. So when you really start, and we'll get deeper into as the season starts, our preview of the team and what we expect and what we see from the rest of the division and the league and kind of how we see things going. That's for the next show. I think the development, and I hear about the pitching lab, and that's fine. And so far, we've seen some good things with the pitchers, even the ones that have come over here. But I think that the development of the system, especially on the positional side, is critically important this year. Critically important to take a step forward. You cannot continue to sustain success when you're trying to scrounge around. And Stearns is still going to scrounge on the scrap heap. But you had Iglesias last year. That's lightning in a bottle. You're trying to get something maybe from a Hayden Singer, Jackson Reitz, Chris Williams, fine. You go and you trade with the Cubs for Canario, fine. That's a lottery ticket. But at some point, you start to see how things go down. You've already seen it here in Port St. Lucie with a couple of obliques, a broken hand. And you're like, okay, you're thinning out quick. And maybe, you know, with the pitching side, Sproat and Tidwell and Hamill, maybe they all of a sudden they become ready. And this is a moot point. And we're not really talking about it. But what we're seeing with the bullpen, you're hearing about some arms down there. The fact that Nunez in the organization is starting to develop and come through. Yeah, Zubar and Brazenbaum were acquired outside the organization, but you have too many spots and you have optionable players. You don't have enough spots. You have all these players. You know, that's an exciting thing. You want to get to that with the starting pitching. You want to get to that maybe with the positional players. And to a certain degree, you had a little bit of that with Beatty and Acuna. But there are other spots, like the outfield, like catching, that aren't quite like that yet. So that's kind of where you're at right now as you hit the dog days of spring training. We are right in the smack of these dog days, the malaise of spring training, where you're into baseball, but you're tired of Port St. Lucie. You don't want to rehash 2024 anymore. You're tired of talking about, I know they're doing a documentary about Soto on SNY later this week. I think it's on Friday, if I'm not mistaken. And you're kind of tired of that whole, you know, Soto sweepstakes. And you just want opening day in Houston. You want new storylines. You want new drama. You want new highs. You don't really want lows, but you know they're going to be part of it. And you want to see what this team is all about as we begin to get to know the Mets, the 2025 Mets, in about a week and a half. So that's what I took away from the spring breakout game. I could sit here. What do you think? I'm going to sit here and talk about Jonah Tong. I could see the numbers. You could see the numbers. Oh, it's great to see the power of Ryan Clifford. I knew about that. Let me see them develop in the scheme of the organization, and let's see if we have players. Because the only way you really know about a player, and you've seen this with Alvarez, is when they get to the big league level and how they perform, how they handle struggles, how they acclimate themselves, when you start to face the elite type of pitching. Everybody had an opinion about Mark Vientos, what he could and couldn't do. He dispelled almost every one of those last year. Now, it's his sophomore full year. He's still kind of on a watch list, so to speak, because the sophomore slump has the league figured him out. When he makes it through that, and there's a lot of listening to him, reports about him, his makeup and what have you, there's a lot of reason to believe that he will, then he's arrived. But it takes some time. Vientos has been in the organization a long time. Been in the organization almost a decade. Going back to when he was drafted. It takes a long time. So anybody you saw yesterday, we could be talking about them in 10 years, 8 years. And not because they've been with the Mets, the big leagues, for 10 years. Because they have their minor league career and then they come up and they have the shuttle. And it's a long process. So, you know, that's really where you're at. And that's going to be a big part of the 2025 Mets. The system, how the system develops. And not only what kind of elite talent they could import, but can they import pieces to a roster? Can they develop pieces to the roster so they don't have to go out and get a backup catcher? They don't have to always go out and get a fifth starter. They don't always have to find a outfielder off of waivers or cash considerations deal to fill out the depth. That's the real, one of the keys of 2025. All right, that's my State of the Union here. A kind of a bridge show before the regular season. One more spring training show. Not really a grapefruit roundup, but we'll come to you next week. We'll do our preview of the 2025 Mets, trying to work on that. And then the regular season starts, and we're back to our Sunday show. Of course, those who are subscribers to Beyond the Mic, expect 2 to 3 pieces a week. I try to use quality over quantity, dive into topics that may not be podcast topics, but sometimes we take those topics and we expand upon them on the podcast. So if you're not a subscriber yet, come on board for the price of one cup of coffee a month, maybe less if you really think about it, and some great deals for new subscribers all the time that Substack puts out there, you know, some trials and things like that. You could become a bigger part of this thing we're trying to do, this community we're trying to build. Nice, intimate community, takes baseball seriously, no pomp and circumstance. We may not be out in spring training with videos and doing all sorts of crazy stuff, fan stuff. That's not who I am. But we like to have really good baseball conversation, look under the hood, and we have this little flow we have going on here, so I'd hope that you'd continue to be part of that and become a bigger part of that. And if you are, thank you. And if you're not, well, give it a shot. So anyway, that's all I have. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetspodcast.com, no G. Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, TalkingMets, no G. And don't forget the newsletter. Like I said, love for you to join. Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks of the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your week. Beginning of the week. Happy St. Paddy's Day. Till next time, take care, everybody.